Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, August the 24th. Today, we're going to be chatting with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor up in Minnesota. You know, we like to check with Barry from time to time to see what's happening in the midterms of 2018. We've had most of the primaries. There are still some primaries outstanding. I think there's one in, well, anyway, I cannot think of where they are, but many primaries have already taken place. So we can now take a look at a couple of things that that will impact the election in November. Of course, number one, the quality of the candidates. I can remember back in 2012 when the Republicans had some problems with some candidates and probably lost some seats they could have won in Montana and Missouri and Indiana for the Senate. Does not appear to be the problem now. They have some strong candidates in those elections. The Democrats have also nominated many new candidates. So we'll talk a little bit about the candidates, the quality of the candidates, and what that tells us about 2016. There has been a lot of discussion about turnout. In some states, turnout has been huge. In other states, it's been a disappointment. Sometimes the Republicans turn out, sometimes the Democrats turn out. So we'll try to get Barry's perspective on the whole question of turnout. Up in Minnesota, they had some very interesting elections, and that's where Barry is, of course, and we'll talk a great deal about that. And then last but not least, we'll sort of we'll consider the President Trump factor in 2016. He has committed himself to the midterms. He has made it very clear that he's going to campaign very hard for the midterms. He's going to go out and try to win, at least keep the House and maybe pick up a few Senate seats. So we'll talk about that and the impact that all of this will have in 2016. And then, of course, after I say hello to our friend Barry Castleman. How are you, Barry?
I'm fine, thank you.
How's the weather?
Rainy.
Rainy, yeah. I think we're going to get some rain. That hurricane will make its way here, that rain, somehow. So there's some rain in our forecast, I think, next week. But your Yankees are doing quite well, so congratulations on that, Barry.
Well, I don't know how well they're doing. They're doing a little bit. They lost four straight to Boston, and they seemed to be on a tailspin. Then they sort of recovered. Now, I mean, I don't know what's happening tonight against Baltimore, the bottom of the worst team and one of the worst teams in baseball, and they can't seem to beat them.
Right.
So, and of course, the Yankees are suffering some very serious injuries. Tom Judge,
yes.
Gregorius, and now some of their pitchers. Severino has gone from being unstoppable to quite stoppable.
That's right.
Tanaka has lost two in a row. And tonight, Sabathia is he's doing okay, but nothing great. So it's the new pitchers that they brought on who are actually holding up the team. And it's the bottom of the lineup that's holding up the team on Duhar and some of the other Torres and Torres. And some of the other players have come through. And, of course, Stanton is hot.
Stanton is holding up
the team. But they're missing out on some of their best players, and I think they're probably going to make the playoffs, but they are certainly not going to win the pennant against the hottest team in baseball, which, of course, are the Red Sox. However, as we both know, in baseball, the Red Sox can be super hot going into the playoffs and then fall apart. You never know.
Right. Well, we remember Cleveland last year. I mean, they were super, super hot at this time, winning 22 in a row or something like that, and then they lost to the Yanks in the first round. So, but yeah, it's a different game after the postseason. I mean, it's just the whole thing starts all over again. But I do think the Yanks are going to make the postseason, and hopefully we'll do a show before the postseason starts, because I feel it that they're going to be in the postseason. Well, speaking of contests and speaking of events, let's talk a little politics. And I mentioned that we wanted to take stock tonight of where we are. Which is the primary that has not happened yet? I know most of them have, but there's a couple
not
happened.
Arizona hasn't happened. It's very important.
Yes.
In the Senate race, and of course, the sad news that Senator
yes.
McCain is no longer going to take treatment, so that indicates it could be close to the end. But of course, I know as a doctor's son,
mm-hmm.
even when you remove, treatment, the human body is a remarkable
yes.
instrument. Sometimes you keep going. So you
mm-hmm.
never know, and you wish, of course, you wish him the best,
yes.
the longest life possible. But should there be an opening, the Republican governor will make an appointment, which is a dilemma because he could appoint McSally, the likely winner of the primary, but then they would be stuck with a very weak candidate against the Democrat and probably lose a Senate seat.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably won't appoint McSally. Then Cindy McCain, the wife of Senator
right.
McCain, is a moderate, so she doesn't really fit the bill. So you'd have to find somebody else in Arizona politics who would be conservative enough to be sufficient. So that's potentially ahead. Florida remains a primary. The Senate race is pretty much decided between Nelson and the outgoing governor. But the governor's
mm-hmm.
race is an open now because the current governor is running for the Senate and
mm-hmm.
could well win. But
that's right.
That means you have an open governor's. And the governor's races this year are very important because they will be all vitally involved in redistricting. Most governors have the right of veto of redistricting plans. I don't know. It varies from state to state. But for certainly in Minnesota, it's very key. And Ohio, it's very key. And so those two states, they're not the only states, but those are the two, I believe, the two major primaries which lie ahead. There's the New York primaries are they have primaries
mm-hmm.
for this and primaries for that. New York is such a jumble because you have so many parties, and you can
mm-hmm.
be on more than one party. So you don't know, and of course, New York is, of course, heavily one-sided, but of course Cuomo, the liberal governor, is being challenged from the far left
mm-hmm.
by Patricia Nixon, and he's taking that seriously, although he's leading in the polls like 3-4-1. But, you know, this is a funny year in blue states like that. You never know what's going to happen, even in Minnesota, which is a purple state. Some of the far left candidates have won in both congressional races and in statewide constitutional races. So it's a very strange political year, Silvio. We have new forces at play in both parties. And
mm-hmm.
And then, of course, as you mentioned in your introduction, we have the President of the United States, who's a altogether different sort of president and political mm-hmm. figure in a midterm year. You don't know what's going to happen. He finally lost a race. He had endorsed 9 candidates for governor, senator, whatever, and 9 of them had won
mm-hmm.
primaries against odds in many cases. So his influence was great. Finally, of all states, the most Republican state in the Union, Wyoming,
right.
he, at the last minute, endorsed a candidate for governor who lost
mm-hmm.
decisively to a much stronger candidate, I might point out. And and who will be the governor. I mean, that's an overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think
sure.
Trump carried that state by 50 points or something.
Right.
God
right,
knows
right.
what. But so there's all these factors that make
right.
this the most unusual year than my memory.
Yes. Let's look at some of the candidates because, there may be too many to look at, but tell me if I'm right or wrong on this. I sense that the Republicans have nominated some very strong candidates who can have a good shot at winning, whether it's Missouri, whether it's North Dakota, even in West Virginia, that's a good candidate as well. And then at the same time, the Democrats have nominated a lot of what they like to call reform candidates or progressives. Would you say that explains how the primaries have gone so far, Barry?
Well, I don't know. I think one thing we have to be realistic about, the Democrats are going to turn out in
mm-hmm.
2018 in November. They are fired up mostly about Trump.
Trump, yeah.
Not about any issues other than certain the left wing of the Democratic Party, the so-called progressive or socialist, neo-socialist
mm-hmm.
wing. They're fired up, but they are isolated, and they're in places where Democrats always win,
mm-hmm.
or almost always win. So that's not going to make a change. Republicans, as you alluded to in your introduction, are turning out as well, even in states like Texas where there weren't races, because
mm-hmm.
What's happening is that the Democrats are trying to they're trying not to nationalize the race, but everybody knows they are, because
mm-hmm.
if they win control of the House, they will impeach President Trump, which would be a mistake, but they will do it. And, of course, Republicans don't even want them to impeach. You know, impeach is only a charge. It's not the conviction or the removal of office. And it certainly won't happen in the Senate. But the Republicans are going to be motivated to turn out to defend the president and to defend the policies. I mean, we are going into November, perhaps, or likely, with a very strong economy, extremely low unemployment, possibly some breakthroughs in our trade negotiations with China and in NAFTA, and even
mm-hmm.
in with the EU. So there's potential pluses for the Republicans, but also potential minuses. And so
mm-hmm.
one of the things I've argued, both on your show and in the various publications I write for, including my own, is that we don't know really at all whether it'll be a blue wave, a red wave, a surge or of either kind, or nothing, or a neutral thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think, in fact, the most likely possibility is that the Democrats will make significant gains in the House, maybe not quite enough to win control, maybe enough to win control, but certainly they're going to pick up gains. But the Republicans are likely, and we can go over those races,
mm-hmm. sure.
some of those races if you wish, of those Senate races, I think it's pretty likely the Republicans are going to pick up anywhere from 2 to 4 seats, maybe more, maybe less, net gain, I mean. They may
mm-hmm.
lose a House, Senate seat
sure.
too. But so that would be certainly not a wave of any kind, and I would what I call the white flag or the white wave, in which
mm-hmm.
you have each side can claim victories, and of course you have governorships, which are very important, and state legislatures, overwhelmingly now controlled by Republicans, and I think the Democrats will probably make some gains. Again, how many we don't know because we don't know where the voters are.
Right.
We know that Democrats are going to turn out real solid Democrats, and Republicans are going to turn out real solid Republicans. But a third of the vote, 25-35%, somewhere in that vicinity, are either independents or loosely tied to a party, and we don't
mm-hmm.
know where they're going.
Right.
And
right.
in fact,
and they decide the election.
Right. And all the polls we're seeing, with some exceptions, there's very low, very high undecided.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in Minnesota, the the Senate race is 32-28 or 33-31. Anyway, but a third of the vote is undecided this late in the game, and we know who the nominees are going to be. So that's very, very unusual, and I think the voters are waiting to see how they feel. Traditionally, it's 4 to 8 or 4 to 10% who are late deciders. I think it's going to be as high as 15 or 20% will decide in the last 2 weeks of this election. In which case, we have no idea who's going to win.
Right. Yeah, that could be the wave that everybody's been talking about. Those undecided votes could be the what pushes one wave or another. Let me ask you a question about this undecided point that you just brought up, because I've heard over the years, and sometimes conventional wisdom is not true, but I've always heard that when there's a lot of undecideds, that's bad news for the incumbent, because for example, in Minnesota, you mentioned Minnesota. The lady that you're talking about is Senator Smith, who took over for Al Franken, right, when he resigned. If at this stage of the game there's that many people undecided about this lady, I don't know. If I was her campaign, I'd be a little worried, Barry.
Well, remember, she's, of course, an appointed senator, and she's new. Nobody knows who she is. So
True. It's
a special case. But that doesn't change the basic psychology. She's the incumbent Democrat, and she should be much higher. I mean, because Amy Klobuchar, the regular senator, I mean, who's having a regular race, is 25 or 30 points ahead, and in the same poll.
Right.
So clearly she's got no problem. She's well over 50%. She's not going to have, and she has no serious opponent. There is an opponent, but nobody knows who he is. And when you have an open governorship, but it's still the DFL is the incumbent party, and of course traditionally Minnesota, after two terms of one party since 1946, has changed. The incumbent party, when there's an open race, changes hands. So it's been every race since 46. So that's 54. That's 72 years in a row.
Right.
72 years. Not, you know, usually the two-term races.
Right.
The incumbent party loses the race for governor, which is very bad news for the DFL. On the other hand, their candidate for governor is currently favored to win over the surprise winner of the Republican primary. Although I think that may, again, be premature, because it looks like this Republican candidate who won the primary against Tim Pawlenty looks like he's a very good candidate, a much better candidate than we thought he was. So,
well, he certainly has a lot of excitement, because this is the candidate, of course, that President Trump supported. Like I think I may have mentioned, I think we spoke about this off the air, that I thought Mark Pawlenty would win. I really did. I thought he was going to win.
I mean, Tim Pawlenty,
yeah. I thought he was going to win because of the name recognition. And so on.
Right, but the president didn't endorse. What he did, however, he played a role, because Pawlenty, during the 2016 campaign, had during the notorious video release, criticized candidate Trump. Eventually, he came around and supported him, and then during this campaign, he's been very strong supporter of Trump. But Johnson had been a solid supporter of Trump all along, no matter what. So he ran ads at the end saying, "I'm the real Trump supporter," and therefore, and many of us think that was decisive difference between the two. Other than, you know, there were many factors. Pawlenty ran a bad campaign. He didn't spend any money, even though he had five times as much money. In the end, I think that the Trump factor was a definite factor in the Minnesota race, even though Trump didn't endorse. But it was a question of who was more loyal. The point being that the Republican base is still very loyal to the president. and they are pretty much ignoring all this news
right.
about convictions and all this stuff that's been going on, by the way, for 2 years. It's
right, exactly. No, I think you're right. I think that they've tuned out. Let me take a break. And when I come back, when we come back, I want to talk about this President Trump factor and talk a little bit about Minnesota and anything else that you want to tell us about the primaries. We're going to take a little break. We want you to hear from my friend Carlos Geddes, and then we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Geddes Harpist. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information right under the show description where you see the link to Barry Castleman and the Prairie Editor. Below that, you will see the link to Carlos Geddes. Let's get back to our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. Barry, Minnesota, many people were saying was going to be one of the surprises of 2018. Do you still think that's the case? Especially
I think
after
so.
The primary.
Well, yeah. I think it's a little different race than we thought it was going to be
mm-hmm.
because we thought, I think many of us, and myself included, thought mm-hmm. that Tim Pawlenty would be at the top of the ticket. He is
yes.
not going to be. It's going to be Jeff Johnson, who was the endorsed candidate, the party endorsed candidate, and had been the nominee as recently as 2014, although he lost in the
mm-hmm.
general election to the current governor, who's now retiring. So that'll be the top of the ticket. The Democrats did nominate, in my view, their strongest candidate, retiring Congressman Tim Walz, who represents an outstate district, although his image as a moderate Democrat has been quite a bit altered by his campaign. Among the major things he did was as an outstate rural congressman, he was a longtime supporter of the NRA and an opponent of gun control. He reversed himself completely during this campaign, and his opponent will get the NRA endorsement, and more than
mm-hmm.
that, he'll get the vote of the gun owners. And of course, Johnson is also pro-life, and Walz is pro-choice. So I believe is pro-choice. So all of the outstate factors that support a Republican will now be back in play, and some of the advantage that they would have had with Walz, he's lost as a result of his attempt, because if he hadn't done that, he probably wouldn't have won the primary because
mm-hmm.
He had a three-way race, and it turns out that the person who had been leading the polls came in a distant third, but the endorsed candidate actually came much closer than most of us thought she would.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very far left, and her lieutenant governor was even further left. And if she had won the primary, I would say it would be very likely the Republicans would take back the governorship. As it stands now, the general consensus, and I don't know where I am in all this yet, but is that that Walz, the Democrat, the DFL candidate, is the favorite. But
mm-hmm.
because there's mitigating factors, some of which I just told you about,
mm-hmm.
and it's not clear who's going to turn out, as you point out. It's both obvious and subtle to point out turnout. I mean, obviously, turnout is everything. But on the other hand, what kind of turnout you're going to get isn't obvious. It depends on many factors, and this year has many factors. The central factor is, on both sides, is Donald Trump, whether you
mm-hmm.
like him or you don't, and if you're passionate about it one way or the other. And where the independent voters are going to be, I don't know.
Right.
In a year like this, where you're going to have strong party turnout, the independent voters actually matter less than they usually do. Normally, they're 25% to 35% of the vote in a normal year, but when you've got heavy party turnout, they can be as low as 10 or 15%. And even though they're still pretty decisive, they're not as decisive as normal. I mean, all bets are off, Silvio.
Right.
And I keep repeating myself.
Yeah.
My friend Newt Gingrich has been writing this a similar thing. He, of course, is more of a Republican cheerleader here, in the sense that he's is a Republican, and he strongly feels the Republicans will do very well this year. I'm less certain of that, although I am as certain as he is that we don't know what kind of wave we're going to get yet, and for reasons which we've already discussed and a few others.
Right.
I think maybe you want to talk about individual Senate races.
Well, what I want to, I do, but I want to, before we leave Minnesota, I want to maybe take a sweep at some of the Senate elections that you mentioned before. But I want to, before we leave Minnesota, though, the big story that out of Minnesota, of course, is Keith Ellison and his problems. And, you know, it's allegations. So we don't know if, I mean, again, I don't, the man is innocent until proven guilty as far as I'm concerned. But nevertheless, these are tough allegations. If he has to drop out, what happens?
Well, that's not clear. There are, you know, he was controversial, very controversial before any of these allegations.
Right.
And he was I was writing that he was a potential problem because he was so far to the left, and certainly compared to Waltz, who's been running as a sort of a moderate liberal, although he ran a little bit to the left in the primary, but his appeal is based on the fact that he's more moderate. Well, how is he going to run if wherever he goes, reporters and voters ask him, well, how do you feel about the extreme, the views which could be interpreted as extreme, certainly the Bernie Sanders type views of, you know, Medicare for all, no borders, no illegal aliens, everyone can come in without any limits, single payer health care, all kinds of things which Minnesotans don't necessarily support, and the majority of Minnesotans don't. And so what you have is you have a problem internally with the DFL. Now, what the DFL's been doing, however, it's been sort of saying going along. So they, if you notice in the last few week or so, you have a number of endorsements, including most importantly the DFL endorsed, because he was not the endorsed candidate. He defeated the endorsed candidate. So they had to re-endorse again. And they went ahead and did it even before anything was settled. And even Mr. Waltz said, let's get to the bottom of this before we make any decisions. But the party went ahead, and now they've endorsed him, and now they face the possibility, should there any new development, any new problems develop, and there are some people say there are some, although nothing is proven, if he had to leave the ticket. And we had a very famous, notorious case where the Republican nominee for governor in 1990 resigned 10 days before the election, in which case the Supreme Court had to intervene to put a Republican on the ticket, because as it stood, without that intervention, there would have been no election. There would have been only one person running for governor, and he would have been a Democrat. In that case, they picked the person who had been the runner-up in the governor's primary. But even then, the first choice of replacing is in the political party. That won't happen again, because the political party, the Republican Party, excuse me, the Democratic Party will pick somebody to be on the ticket. It depends on when it happens. Does it happen next week, or does it happen if it happens 3 days before the election, there's nothing that can be done. And so there's many suspense-laden circumstances running through this election in Minnesota, and then you have those three, or actually four, very, very competitive House races, two with Republican incumbents and two with Democratic incumbents. I think the 8th district looks very much like a Republican pickup, but the 2nd district could be a DFL pickup. from the incumbent who was elected last time. And then you've got other races, and then you have the legislative races for the state house. There's no Senate, no state Senate races this time. But the Republicans control the legislature. If they win the governorship, it'll be the first time in decades that they'll have all three branches, and they'll be able to put through their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a lot of because
a lot of things up in the air.
Because Minnesota has a little bit of everything. It has an open mm-hmm. governor's race, two, not one, U.S. Senate races, four out of eight competitive House races, the legislature up for race, and then they've got a national story in the race for Attorney General with Keith Ellison. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing else quite like it in the country.
You're right.
You were right to ask me about it, and of course I'm here, so I'm covering everything very closely.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's right.
I must tell you, I don't know how it's going to turn out.
Yeah, no, I don't recall, frankly. And, you know, I'm not an expert on Minnesota politics, but, you know, we follow it from a distance like we do others. And I never recall anything like what you're doing now or what you have now. It's just fascinating. Well, let's take a look at two more topics here. And I know you had a visitor you want to talk about as well. So let's talk a little bit about some of the Senate races some very competitive Senate races. So tell me how you see some of them right now. Just start wherever you want to start.
Well, there's supposed to be three really competitive ones, mm-hmm. West Virginia, Indiana, and North Dakota. I think, however, assuming that Manchin just votes to confirm Judge Kavanaugh, I assume that he will likely win. I've met his opponent, the Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, a very good man, but wasn't necessarily the strongest candidate they could have picked. There was a congressman who would have been stronger, many people feel. And Manchin is unique in that he was also, he's not only the senator, but he's a former governor, and he's very popular, even though the state is now overwhelmingly Republican. And he conveys an image of being a moderate. However, he has crossed President Trump, and President Trump has promised, has already been to West Virginia to support Patrick Morrissey, it'll be somewhat competitive. But I think Manchin, again, if he confirms Kavanaugh, will probably be very hard to beat. In Indiana, I think, is a very strong chance of a pickup. The incumbent Democrat is Mr. Donnelly. He, too, must there's a poll today that says he does better if he doesn't confirm Kavanaugh. So you don't even know what those things mean. But the president carried Indiana by a big margin, and his choice of Kavanaugh is popular there. And Mike Braun is a very good candidate. He's been here in Minnesota. I've interviewed him. He's clearly a very good candidate. And then, of course, you have North Dakota, where the incumbent Heidi Heitkamp is one of the most moderate Democrats, and she's running against the only congressman in the state. So he's already won statewide and is popular statewide, Kevin Cramer. And that race, he is very close. I think he has a tiny lead, it goes back and forth. But then today, I mentioned to you before the show, we had Matt Rosendale come from Montana, which is another considered competitive race, although the incumbent Democrat, John Tester, has been generally favored. After meeting Mr. Rosendale today, however, I'm not so sure. I think the polls have been slightly favoring Tester, but I don't know what. I think that may change, number one. And number two, Tester's in a real predicament. Rosendale will have the NRA. He'll have he's pro-life. And he's strongly supporting of Trump, whereas Trump has been really angered by Tester. Tester, in his appointment for the Navy Secretary, or I think it was Navy Secretary or whatever, one of his cabinet posts.
That's right, yeah.
Tester crossed him, and so he's determined to defeat Tester.
Mm-hmm.
And Tester is in a spot. He did not vote to confirm the president's first choice for the Supreme Court. Gorsuch. So it's very hard for him to switch, because if he does, he turns off his own base.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't win either way. And the state voted, I think, 30 points for President Trump. And the Kavanaugh appointment is extremely popular. So when you put it all together, I don't see how Tester can make it here,
mm-hmm.
barring the unforeseen. And then, of course, finally, there's that race in Missouri where McCaskill's the incumbent. She played a sort of a dirty trick last time to help create a very weak opponent for her in the Republican side. This time she's got a very strong opponent, the Attorney General Josh Hawley, and he's slightly ahead or is very close.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, as I pointed out in a recent piece, there's some races that have appeared at the end here,
mm-hmm.
particularly in New Jersey, where Menendez is is virtually a tie, and of course potentially in Michigan, where a black
mm-hmm.
West Point graduate, who's the state treasurer, I believe, who's already run statewide, is a very attractive. They picked their strongest candidate by far
mm-hmm.
against not a particularly colorful Democratic incumbent, Debbie Stabenow. And then, of course, there's Minnesota, which is, I believe, now a toss-up in the Tina Smith versus Corinne Housley race. So when you take it all together, it's very hard to imagine. Now, it's true there's a potential loss for Republicans in Arizona, Nevada, and even in Tennessee, although I think the Republican has reasserted herself and the popular Democratic governor from the past is starting to fade, although
mm-hmm.
he's still a very formidable candidate. So you don't know who's going to win what at this point, but it looks very hard to imagine. Certainly, I think there's some Democrats who are actually saying they can take back control of the Senate. It's, of course, technically possible, and I would never say it can't be done. I've learned the old-fashioned way, never to say never, but it doesn't seem very likely. Much more likely is the Republicans pick up a net of 2 to 4 seats.
Right, and that would really be – and that's what I saw – I saw Speaker Gingrich the other day on television talking about that, and he was saying, how can you call it a blue wave if we pick up 4 seats in the Senate? That makes a lot of sense to me. The other thing that the Speaker brought up, Speaker Gingrich brought up, and I know you talk to him regularly, so you may be familiar with what he said, but he said that if Governor Cox or the candidate for governor in California, Cox, can help the Republicans hold some of the House seats out there. There's 5 or 6 House seats out there. That if the Republicans can hold or the incumbents in California can survive, that it's almost impossible for the Democrats then to pick up the 23 or 24 seats because they're counting on California or a bunch of them coming out of California, Barry.
Well, that's true. And, of course, there's some pickups in Ohio and Pennsylvania, which the Democrats are counting on to be their majority. As you know, of course, it isn't just Newt and myself who are arguing against the blue wave. Mark Penn,
mm-hmm.
President Clinton's pollster and one of the leading Democratic pollsters for the last 30 years, and clearly a Democratic liberal Democrat, has been
mm-hmm.
pointing out and warning the Democrats the numbers aren't there for them.
Right,
and that he doesn't see even a takeover of the House. He says it's just not there. Now, that doesn't
mm-hmm.
make it so.
Right.
But I found that very interesting. He's not alone. There's Willie Brown, and the former leader in California, has been warning his party in California not to take things for granted, even in the governor's race, although I think the Democrat will win. But we just don't know. There's so many contrary factors this year, things, signs on both sides that you could seize upon and say, well, this is going to prove that we're going to have a blue wave. This is going to prove we're going to have a red wave. But they're contrary.
Right.
They don't necessarily prove anything. And
I
come back to the point I made at the outset of the show, which is this is a year where a significant number of voters will make up their mind at the end.
Right.
And those voters will determine what kind of election we're going to have.
That's right. Barry, let me take a little break, and then when we come back, I want to spend the next 10 minutes or so talking about the Trump factor in 2018 and how he could, in fact, be the person who persuades those undecideds to go one way or the other. I mean, we don't know how they'll go, but Trump will be a factor. We'll be right back. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're chatting with our friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. We've been looking at the different states and some of the trends and some of the results and what may or may not happen. I want to talk, Barry, about President Trump because he is, in many ways, could be the wild card in 2018. He could be the person who takes all those undecideds one way or the other and in a sense, make it one way or the other in November. So let's talk about President Trump and what you think will be the factor. And I would also add something else, too. You were talking about President Trump being very committed to defeating Senator Tester in Montana, and he has also been out there supporting the Republicans in West Virginia. I think another fellow that is also extremely popular and extremely important is Vice President Pence. He's going to be out there, too, campaigning in many places. So I think the two of them are going to be a factor, Barry.
Well, I think it's true. Actually, Vice President Pence is coming to Bloomington, Minnesota, which is a suburb of Minneapolis, this week to campaign for the final post-primary Republican ticket. And I don't think there's much question the president will be back, especially to campaign in the 8th District for the 8th district candidate, and maybe even for the governor's race, because the governor's candidate, Jeff Johnson, is a strong Trump supporter. I don't think there's much question that the president is engaged, as few presidents have been, in a midterm, and has put his own reputation on this, his reputation as a political influence on the line. And so far, as I pointed out, 8 of 9 endorsements, but that was strictly among the Republicans, have come through for him. And the last one where he didn't was, I still don't understand why he did it, because his candidate just couldn't, wasn't likely to, and he waited until the very last day to make the endorsement. But now the president is asking, what he's really asking for is a huge Republican pro-Trump turnout. He certainly isn't going to get very many votes on the Democrat, have hardly any votes on the Democratic side. And I don't know how well he's doing among independents at this point. It depends on the kind of independents we're talking about. If they're more conservative independents, I think he's doing pretty well. But if they're more liberals, independents, I don't know how well he's doing. So what he's basically trying to do here is to excite his base into a strong turnout. The Democrats have no one who's capable of doing that. But what they do have is they have the president, who in a negative way, could bring out their voters. So, so as you pointed out, he's the wild card either way here, either positive or negative. And but he's, we've never had a, at least in my lifetime, a president like Donald Trump, who's both incredibly skillful and then seems to make some dumb moves and mistakes, which sometimes don't turn out to be so dumb after all, but occasionally don't serve him. I mean, the Helsinki incident was not a successful event, let's face it, and he's had others. And frankly, even though I think his base is unimpressed with all the charges against him, let's face it, some of these people who are his lawyers and his close associates are not, I mean, they've been found guilty of, of crimes and are maybe not the nicest people in the world. So that doesn't necessarily reflect well on him in some ways. Apparently, for most of his supporters, it doesn't matter. Because, as I point out, it's not the president's character that's really attracting voters. It's what he's doing. I mean, let's face it, he has changed the he's already changed the judiciary in a very strong conservative way. He's changed American foreign policy abruptly. We no longer have any vestiges of the Obama foreign policy. He has made Obamacare virtually, it's still there, but it's basically non-functional in many ways. In some ways, it's still there, but it's been changed dramatically. Many of its basic precepts are no longer there. You no longer have to have Obamacare. And then the whole regulatory thing for small business has been, then of course the huge impact of the tax bill and the economy booming, incredibly low, historic low unemployment among black. And the other thing is, no one's talking about this, and you're an expert on Hispanic vote, Silvio, but I understand that both black vote and Hispanic vote, even though there's he has a minority of those votes, it's dramatically higher, especially black vote is almost twice as high
during the
election.
That's exactly right, and you know, when that information came out, I said, well, I'm going to wait for another poll. You know, I'm always cautious in that sense because, you know, one poll that doesn't tell you anything. But you know, you had Zogby that came out with the Hispanic, and then you had another poll confirming that, and then you've had a couple of polls with the blacks. I mean, that I think is very critical because, as you indicated, look, if Mitt Romney had gotten 20% of the black vote, he probably would have won Florida, Virginia, and Ohio, and maybe Pennsylvania. So I think it's very important what's happening. But you said one thing, Barry, one last point I wanted to make. You were talking about his base, and I agree with you. I think the base is invested in Trump at the moment. But they've completely tuned out all of the news, and it almost seems to me, Barry, that there's two audiences in the country, one that has completely tuned out these daily attacks on Trump, and the other that can simply not get enough of those attacks, you know? And, you know, we'll see who turns out, Barry.
Right. So I think you're exactly right. I think the people who don't like Trump can't get enough of it and are convinced and have been convinced for a year and a half that the latest event, one after another, like 30, is the end. And it never, of course, is the end. But you never
can be
sure that we don't get it an end. And then, as I always point out, after all, should the very unlikely happen and Donald Trump be impeached and convicted or would have to resign or whatever, you got
Mike Pence.
Mike Pence. And
right.
He's even in many ways more conservative and less colorful. And I'm not so sure the Democrats will be pleased by that change, should that happen.
You're right, because
God
it would
forbid.
Be basically the same. I mean, if Mike Pence, I don't know, I agree with you. It's highly unlikely that this would happen. But in the event that it did, you would get Mike Pence. The judge appointments are going to be the same. The economy is going to be the same. So what you're basically getting would be a potentially stronger Republican president. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Pence is not controversial.
Well, that's it. That's it. You know,
You would go into the 2020 election, let us say,
yes.
Or if it were later, 2024 election, with a psychologically strong candidate because he would have taken over. So, I don't know. I don't think Democrats have thought it out.
No,
I come back to the things I've said. Their real best way out of all this for them is to come up with two things. One, some younger, strong, mm-hmm. attractive candidates for president, men and women, or
mm-hmm.
women. And number two, with some new ideas of how to resolve the critical issues of health care, the environment,
mm-hmm.
employment, education, and foreign policy. But if they don't have any new ideas, one thing the Republicans do, they have ideas.
That's it.
And they're putting them into practice.
That's it.
You may not like
them. Exactly right. Yeah.
But they're putting them
in
practice.
You may not like them, but that's it.
You have to have an alternative.
That's exactly
right. And if the alternative is socialism, I don't think it's going to sell in America.
No, I don't think so either, and that's your problem. Well, Barry, as always, thank you for the time, and thank you for bringing us so much information. Let's do another one maybe middle of September or so, toward the end of September, and let's take stock of where we are at that time. We'll do a little bit more foreign policy. I know you wrote a foreign policy post. We'll talk a little bit about that one as well. But, again, thank you so much for your time. It's always a great honor and a great pleasure to chat with you, Barry.
Well, the pleasure is mine. Good night.
Thank you so much. Our great friend, Barry Castleman, up in Minnesota, the Prairie Editor. We have a link to the Prairie Editor on the show information. I would encourage you to check it out. I always do. I recommend it to just about everybody I meet, and I often quote Barry when I write stories at the American Thinker and so on, because he is truly on top of the situation, understands, I think, the political movement or the political wind as much as anybody, I think, in the country. And if you really want to get a feel for what's going on, just check out the Prairie Editor and become a follower of Barry Castleman, the Prairie Editor. Well, every time we talk to Barry, the time just absolutely flies, and tonight is no exception. So have yourself a wonderful Friday night. Have yourself a wonderful weekend, and we'll touch base the next time. From Dallas, Texas, this is Silvio Canto. Saying good night.